get people rearranged. I know some may have to leave and others are trying to get in. I think there may be still a little room upstairs. We probably have an overflow room as well, so we'll try to accommodate everyone. We welcome you all here for this afternoon's work. Let's read the next two items together, please.
1156, adopt a policy opposing all project proposals that would increase the amount of crude oil being transported by rail through the City of Portland and the City of Vancouver, Washington. 1157, oppose expansion of infrastructure whose primary purpose is transporting or storing fossil fuels in or through Portland or adjacent waterways.
Thank you. Well, let me set the stage for this work and then turn it over to Commissioner Fritz to discuss the first of these two resolutions. There have been other times when Portland and Oregon have led, whether it was land use planning or light rail and streetcar transportation, green buildings, green roofs, and energy policy. There have been other times when our city has led, and cities lead in this work of environmental innovation and policy. But there have been no times in the past, I think, that equal the importance of our leadership now. The world is at a turning point. We have a chance to make a difference. We have a chance to make a difference here that will then be just as those other things were replicated in other cities and then become a movement that then has a global impact. So I'm very proud of the work that we have before us this afternoon. I'm so appreciative that you're all here to participate in it. And with that, let me turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Fritz, to talk about the first of these two resolutions.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, everybody, for coming. We didn't expect quite such a wonderful turnout on a Wednesday afternoon, so we're working to set up an overflow room because I think the fire marshal is going to be pretty concerned pretty soon. Thank you again for coming, and I'm very honored to propose the first of these resolutions, which is to oppose the transport of oil by train through our region. As many of you will remember, because you were part of the previous effort when Commissioner Fish and I partnered with Mayor Adams to have a similar resolution opposing coal trains. I see many of you wearing the Beyond Coal t-shirts and were part of that effort. And indeed, it was a significant effort in helping to change the tide of public opinion in the state of Washington, the state of Oregon, and the entire United States. And so here we are to do it again, and this time opposing the transport of crude oil through our city, and particularly through the city of Vancouver, Washington. This is a very happy occasion because I'm proposing that the City Council of Portland be in absolute agreement with the City Council of Vancouver, which sometimes isn't always the case. So this matter was brought to my attention over the summer when Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and others came to my office and told me about the proposed terminal. I think I was most persuaded by the Longshoremen's Union there opposing that terminal on the basis that even if there were jobs for their members, those jobs would be so dangerous that they couldn't put their members in harm's way. And so you're going to be hearing from a representative of that union today. And I'm going to try to keep my presentation and the mayor's short. We're going to have presentations by staff and invited testimony. Then we're going to have a short amount of time for Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Novick to ask questions and perhaps propose amendments. And then we're going to get to testimony as soon as we can. And I'm going to be helping the mayor with timekeeping because I'm a mom and I'm good at that.
Yes, you are, and yes, you are. Thank you, Commissioner. Let me briefly describe the second of these two resolutions. Portland's businesses and residents are moving away from fossil fuels, and we must, because we have been told we have only a little time to make a difference in climate change. I had the opportunity this summer to go to the Vatican and meet with Pope Francis about his encyclical about climate change, along with the 60 other mayors from around the world. And there were really three key lessons that were reinforced for me in that discussion. One is that there is very little time. We must act now. The second is that it's not too late. It was an optimistic message. It wasn't that all we get to do is damage control. The climate is warming and will warm by at least 1.5 or 2 degrees, but we have a chance, the scientists all tell us, to avoid that 5-degree rise that would be catastrophic. So it's really bad. It's not too late. And the third lesson was the most striking of all. In order to make it not too late, we have to leave much of the fossil fuel that we've already discovered in the ground, strand it there and not use it. And frankly, that was revelatory to me. I think to a lot of good environmental Oregonians, the knowledge that not only what much we change, but we must not use some things that we've already found and counted on. That's kind of a new phenomenon, I think, for us as Americans. But it's the truth, and we have to acknowledge it and live it. Now, this is not an original action here in Portland in this sense, in that we've had a long history of environmental leadership, like I mentioned. We adopted one of the nation's first local climate action plan in 1993 when I sat where Commissioner Novick sits now as a new city commissioner. Just 2 months ago, we passed a resolution that adds fossil fuel companies to the city's do not buy list for how we invest your money in financial markets to take care of it. We're installing solar panels on city buildings, and under your leadership, Commissioner Fish, we have an amazing project going on where we're using biogas to run some of our vehicles. So we're doing the right things in what we do here in the city, and these resolutions are of a piece with that. So I'm very pleased that this is before us today. We're going to call on a series of panels and staff to come up and explain the substance of each of these resolutions. We have some invited testimony, and then, as Commissioner Fritz said, we'll try to get to as many of you as we possibly can who want to speak to these items this afternoon. So with that, I believe we're going to invite Christina Neves up to...
So, Mayor, before we invite a panel, you mentioned the fire marshal earlier. We're probably going to get a pass because I think there is a firefighter somewhere around here. But the one thing we are required to do is maintain circulation because we're an accessible building.
On the back there.
Which means that people have to be able to enter and go the full loop. So if you're blocking someone and it might be an older adult that wants to leave to go to the bathroom or something, we have to correct that. And we can't. Okay. And these corridors here have to be open as well.
And apparently the Lovejoy room is going to be open in about 5 minutes for some overflow space as well. So that will help. Good. Okay. Is Christina ready to come up, Commissioner?
Yes.
If she can make her way through the crowd. All right, Christina. And Michael. Great.
All right. Good afternoon. Oh, we'll wait for Commissioner Fish. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Christina Nieves. I'm with the Office of Commissioner Amanda Fritz. And I want to take this opportunity to give you a little bit of background on the oil train resolution before you today. So there is currently a proposal to build a very large oil terminal in the city of Vancouver, Washington. This terminal would provide space to transfer oil from trains to ocean vessels that would then travel down the Columbia River. This train-to-sea terminal would have the capacity to transfer approximately 360,000 barrels of oil per day. And with that enormous amount of oil comes an enormous amount of risk. I brought some visual aids to show you today. So this was a picture of a train derailment in Quebec, July 2013. This train derailment killed 47 people, and the cleanup and rebuilding costs will exceed $2 billion. This is a similar situation in Alabama. A train derailed and spilled 630,000 gallons of crude oil to a nearby wetland. This is another train derailment and explosion. This one spilled 476,000 gallons of oil. And finally, my last slide is of Lynchburg, Virginia. In April 2014, not only did the train derail, but it also spilled into the James River, and as you can see, it set it on fire. So these are just some of the consequences that happen from oil by train transportation. There was such concern in Vancouver that the City Council of Vancouver actually voted to... can we shut the slides off? Sorry about that. The City Council of Vancouver voted to oppose the oil terminal, and also to urge the final decision maker, Governor Inslee, to oppose the terminal as well. One of the main arguments in support of building this terminal is, of course, job creation. People are concerned with the lack of jobs. However, the International Longshoremen and Warehouse Union of Vancouver, that represents some of the workers that would be most impacted by this terminal, they all voted to oppose the oil terminal. And we have a panelist who will give you a little bit of insight as to how they reached that decision. So the oil train resolution does two things. Number one, it acknowledges the dangers and negative impacts that oil train transportation and oil train projects come with. Number two, it makes clear our support of Vancouver City Council's decision, and hopefully, I hope that the resolution will also urge Governor Inslee to oppose the project as well. But I think that both of these resolutions do a really good job of getting to the fundamental beliefs of that we have as Portlanders, and that is to increase our ability to be responsible stewards of our resources and to protect our environment. I also believe that the City of Portland does a good job of looking at innovative and creative solutions to our energy needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. I would just echo your observations, Mayor, about cities really being at the forefront of this. Last week I was with counterparts of mine from 100 cities across the country sharing lessons learned around climate action plans. And as you noted, 20 years ago, we were the only one with a climate action plan. And today there's this, you know, kind of superhighway of information back and forth between cities and breaking new ground. I think this effort is in that same spirit.
I'll get a little closer to the mic there. There
I
you go.
Do so.
There you
Thank
go.
You. So development of tar sands, shale oil, fracking across the western U.S. and Canada has, I think as we've understood here, led to a number of very large fossil fuel infrastructure projects proposed up and down across the west, pipelines, terminals, export facilities. We already have crude oil passing through Portland on its way to Klatskanai, where it's transloaded onto ships. Christina described some of the concerns about safety and traffic impacts of the oil trains. Transporting other fossil fuels, certainly coal, natural gas, propane, raises similar issues both locally in Portland and also in neighboring communities throughout the gorge. Tribal communities have been especially compelling in illustrating the risks these projects pose to their economic livelihood and to their culture. We're also mindful that the infrastructure projects create jobs and potentially significant numbers of jobs as they are built, and then much more modest numbers once they're operational. With all these new fossil fuels coming out of the ground across the West, and at the same time, urgency mounting to reduce carbon emissions to respond to climate change, the climate action plan that was adopted earlier this year directed city staff to develop options for a fossil fuel policy that would give guidance both to bureaus and also to the Planning and Sustainability Commission about how to handle these situations. We've not had them in the past, anything like the scale that we're being faced with today. So the second resolution specifically addresses the expansion of infrastructure whose primary purpose is to transport or store fossil fuels. So we're trying to get at the growth of the fossil fuel industry and Portland's potential role in that. So it does not deal with existing infrastructure. It also doesn't deal with infrastructure like roads, for example, where, yeah, you have fossil fuels coming across roads, but the primary purpose of roads isn't specifically for that fossil fuel infrastructure. So we're really trying to get at dedicated infrastructure whose primary purpose is to expand the movement of fossil fuels. The resolution also states it's not intended to restrict improvements, for example, to improve the seismic resilience or to eliminate leaks or otherwise improve the efficiency of infrastructure. That investment is important. Improves safety, improves efficiency. The resolution is also not intended to restrict provision of service directly to end users. So, for example, a new building that's built in town could still have natural gas service, or a gasoline station could still be sited. That's what that provision is trying to get at. That definition of end user is a really important detail. And so that's the kind of thing where this resolution by itself does not have force of law, but it gives staff and the Planning and Sustainability Commission broad guidance to come up with code language that they would then recommend to you, that we'll need to define that very carefully. And that's something I think we'll probably hear about from some folks today and we do need to establish a shared understanding of what that's trying to get at so that staff have clear direction when they go off to do any subsequent work.
But can I ask a couple of questions about that now?
Sure.
What is a gas station if it's not a facility for storage of fossil fuels?
So the distinction we're trying to make is between a facility that's providing the fuels directly to an end user and one that's simply passing them through. And the reason that's significant is that typically providing them directly to an end user is going to involve much smaller volumes. And so, for example, from a safety perspective, there's still risk to that, but it's not concentrated all in one large facility. It's distributed. And so the consequences from a safety perspective are they are much lower, because if you're going to have an incident, it's going to be small. Same thing in terms of impacts on traffic, for example. You don't have the mile-long oil train or coal train. You've got distribution to a much smaller end point that's providing service directly to an end user. That's what that's trying to get at.
Okay, but I'm actually kind of confused by the exemption for service directly to an end user, too, because if what we're concerned about is climate disruption, aren't we trying to restrict service to end users ultimately? Because it's the end users that are burning the carbon.
We're definitely trying to reduce use of the fuels by end users. So, for example, natural gas.
Raise it up, Michael.
Raise it up a little bit, Mike. There you go.
All right. Thank you. Natural gas. We've got a lot of new construction going on in town. Many of those buildings will have natural gas service. You know, Northwest, we want over time to see Northwest Natural sell less gas. But that doesn't mean that it will necessarily be provided to fewer people. It's going to be provided to more people. You know, we've already seen the same thing happen with gas stations, where fewer gallons of gas were sold in Multnomah County in 2013 than in 1990. So we are adding people who are served by this infrastructure, but we're still reducing use. That's the scenario we want to be able to accommodate. If we simply said no more gas, then we need to, you know, it sort of casts us into a different and more constrained kind of energy options.
Let me get you to hold the rest of your questions, Commissioner, because I think we want to have the two invited panels, and then we'll bring staff back up for council questions.
Okay. So this question of end users clearly is important. So the resolution sort of establishes this broad policy, tries to clarify what its intent is. The resolution asks bureaus to review existing laws and identify opportunities to improve public safety, improve public health. The resolution also directs the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, my colleagues, to develop code changes, again, that would go through the legislative process, come back for your consideration. That's a process that typically takes at least 6 months for non-controversial issues, so just to give a sense of timelines. And then the resolution calls for the city to consult with tribal governments, with the state, with other local governments, since these are issues that really span all of our jurisdictions. No single public agency controls. We need to have a kind of broad approach to this. And so our expectation would be we need to work across all levels of government, as well as with private sector stakeholders. So with that,
okay,
you want to take questions?
I would say, why don't you two stand by? Let's bring up our invited panels, and then we'll get you back up for council member questions before we move to public testimony. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Mayor, at what point are you going to entertain amendments?
After the panels. So you want me to call the first panel here, Commissioner, which is Regna Merritt, Dan Sears, Michael Lang, and Kager Claybaugh.
Hi, my name is Regna Merritt. I'm a retired physician assistant, and I'm the program director at Oregon
One
Physicians for Social Responsibility. Our program is a healthy climate program.
Sorry, go ahead. We're just working out logistics behind you. Okay.
So Oregon PSR uses science and evidence-based expertise to protect the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the climate that sustains us. Today, we're here to express profound gratitude to Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz for bringing forward two resolutions which can prevent harm and protect the health of Portland residents for generations to come. As we heard, the rapid development of fossil fuel resources in the interior West has resulted in a stunning increase in new projects proposed to transport oil, coal, tar sands, propane, and other fossil fuels through to the West Coast. In the Pacific Northwest, almost all the proposed oil trains and coal trains travel or will travel along the Columbia through the Scenic Gorge, and many will move dangerous cargo through Portland. In fact, we could see 100 oil trains every week in the region, many of them moving to and fro between Portland and Vancouver, each with trains a mile and a half to a mile and a quarter in size. What makes these projects so bad is that some of these trains are already moving through our neighborhoods, but many more could come. There's no doubt that Portland needs good family wage jobs. However, the economic opportunities presented by fossil fuel infrastructure are modest, with few jobs and little value added when compared to related health care costs. We heard that already we've seen 47 people killed, thousands of people evacuated from their homes, billions in property damage, and city drinking water supply shut down. Our team at PSR analyzed 125 peer-reviewed journal articles and connected proposed oil projects to increased rates of illness, hospitalization, and healthcare costs. Oil trains can and will lead to fires, explosions, derailments, increased air pollution, first responder delays, excessive noise, oil tank fires and explosions, spills, and climate-induced impacts. That translates very simply into heart and lung problems like asthma and COPD, cancer, growth and development problems, stress and mental health problems, injury and death. And we have to think about the populations in our community that are already at risk. Children, the elderly, and those at an increased risk due to their race, ethnicity, income, or level of exposure and pre-existing conditions. We find that oil transport and storage represents an unacceptable threat to human health and safety, and we call on the council to support these two resolutions and leave a legacy that protects our health and our climate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Who'd like to be next?
Musical chairs.
You're doing fine. Thank you.
Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Dan Sears. I'm the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper. Columbia Riverkeeper and our 8,000 members and supporters are here to tell you that we support both resolutions in front of you today, but I'm going to address the oil train resolution first. We'd like to thank Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Hales for your leadership in bringing this issue before the Portland City Council. It's a very important issue. Communities along the Columbia River are faced with an unprecedented and new threat, the idea of moving vast quantities of fossil fuels, particularly oil trains, down the Columbia River in trains that are known to derail, spill, and ignite. The oil train resolution you're considering is both timely and appropriate because there are over 100 trains per week that could be headed down the Columbia River. Each train carries 3 million gallons of oil in rail cars known to spill, known to ignite. A spill in the Columbia River would decimate salmon habitat, disrupt river traffic, and threaten drinking water supplies downstream. As you've seen from Christina, Bakken oil has a tendency to explode. What you may not know is that these trains can also carry very heavy tar sands crude, which when it spills may sink into the Columbia River and be very difficult to clean up, as happened in Kalamazoo, in the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. Taken together, all of the oil tank projects in the Northwest would exceed the capacity of the Keystone XL pipeline. If someone were to propose building a new pipeline the size of Keystone XL down the Columbia River, we'd say that's crazy. What Portland can do today with this resolution is to stand up, enter into this debate, and say that they don't support, that we don't support the establishment of a pipeline and rails through the city. So I want to address a couple things that are really important. You'll be standing with the City of Vancouver by taking this important resolution. The City of Vancouver voted in 2014 to oppose the oil trains. The Vancouver Firefighters Union very recently took a position against the project, stating that a derailment could cause, quote, local residents being caught in the blast zone, oil spilling into the Columbia River, and first responders rushing to deal with an explosive situation that with inadequate training, manpower, or equipment to handle. It's a quote from the president of the Firefighters Union in Vancouver. And a majority of voters last night elected Eric LeBrant to the Port Commission of Vancouver. And that was a very clear referendum on the oil by rail issue in Vancouver. What we're pointing out today in support of this resolution is that this resolution empowers the city to weigh in a full-throated way in opposition to oil by rail, a new risk to our river. It also empowers the city to lead the entire region in a different direction, away from projects that threaten the health, safety, and environmental integrity of our Columbia River. We're playing Russian roulette, essentially, every time an oil train comes down the Columbia River. You are well-suited and well-positioned to help the region not load more bullets into that gun. And we ask you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Please do.
On a related subject, what do you think it will take to get the federal government to conduct a comprehensive impact statement on coal dust?
You know, that's a good, I'm sorry, coal dust?
Coal dust.
Oh, it's somewhat unrelated. I actually would defer on that to Michael Lang, who's here with Friends of the Gorge, who could potentially speak to that.
Michael, welcome.
Thank you, and may I address that question after my prepared statement?
Please, yeah.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Michael Lang. I'm Conservation Director for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. I also serve on the Executive Committee for the Stand Up to Oil Coalition, whose mission is to stop proposals for oil by rail terminals in the Northwest from endangering our children, our communities, and the climate. Friends of the Columbia Gorge thanks Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, and the City Council for allowing us to come before you and testify today in favor of resolutions opposing oil by rail terminals and also additional fossil fuel infrastructure in Portland. The Columbia River Gorge is a national scenic treasure and an icon of the Northwest. The gorge is protected as a federally designated national scenic area, but today the gorge is facing its biggest threat since Congress designated it as a national scenic area in 1986. Crude oil shipments by rail through the gorge and massive oil terminals on the Columbia River and throughout the region are a threat not only to the gorge and the region's inhabitants, but this is a direct threat to the core values that make us proud to live and work in this region. More than a dozen proposals for oil by rail terminals are pending throughout the Northwest, including the largest oil by rail terminal in the United States, Tesoro's Vancouver Energy Project. If approved, all of this oil would be transported by rail through the gorge. These terminals would far exceed the refining capacity in the region. We don't need them. Tesoro would transport an average of 15 million gallons of oil per day through the Columbia River Gorge on rails to Vancouver and then down the Columbia River in oil tankers or barges. If Vancouver Energy and all other terminals proposed in the Northwest are approved, 100 oil trains per week would travel through the gorge. This would convert the Columbia River Gorge from a national scenic area into a national oil pipeline. This is especially alarming in light of the oil train derailments and explosions that have shaken the country over the past 2 years, and you've heard a little bit of this testimony. An oil train accident, spill, and fire in the Columbia River Gorge would be devastating to its communities and the environment. Transporting crude by rail is inherently unsafe. Even the newest federal rules that would allow tank cars to proceed into the future could puncture at speeds as low as 12 miles an hour. 12 miles an hour. Think about that. If an oil-loaded car just tipped over with gravity, it'd probably puncture at 12 miles an hour. It's inherently unsafe. That's why firefighters from across the region are opposing the Tesoro Terminal and other oil-by-rail terminals because they'd be unable to respond to a spill and unable to keep us safe. And I think that's a big message here. When our emergency responders are telling us that we cannot keep you safe, it's a message that these terminals need to be denied. Public opposition to Tesoro's oil-by-rail terminal and other terminals is intense, and it's growing every day. So communities along the Columbia River Gorge from the Dalles and from Hood River all the way down to Vancouver have adopted resolutions opposing oil by rail to the gorge. And I think today they're reaching out to you and asking for your support and your solidarity and helping protect their communities and all of our communities from oil by rail. So this is an opportunity for Portland to join with other local and regional governments along the Columbia River and approve resolutions that would oppose oil by rail terminals in the region and also set a policy opposing new fossil fuel infrastructure in the city of Portland. So Friends of the Columbia Gorge ask you to take this opportunity today, reach out and support communities throughout the Northwest and adopt these resolutions. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Claybaugh, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for the time. I appreciate it. My name is Cadre Claybaugh. I am Vice President of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 4 in Vancouver, and I'm here to speak in favor of your resolutions today. In June 2013, upon learning about Tesoro coming to the Port of Vancouver or wanting to, at our union meeting, the membership voted unanimously to oppose the project because we know that one spill in the river will destroy the river, put the whole system out of business for as long as it takes to clean up the spill, putting us all out of work. Now, we listened to Tesoro tell everybody, you know, how safe the product is, that it wouldn't explode. 1 month later, 47 people die in Canada. And since, knowing that they're going to be, you know, under a microscope, the industry basically took no steps to learn how to move their products safely. And as a matter of fact, they've proven without a doubt that they cannot. Many derailments, spills, explosions, fires, rivers on fire, fireballs 800 feet wide, 1,000 foot tall. BNSF recently said that they were not going to build their 3,000 or 5,000 safer rail cars. Tesoro saying, oh, well, don't worry, we are, and they have maybe 200 built. We know that the industry touts safety. You know, the shipping industries, the rail industries, they tout safety. That's all they talk about, safety, safety, safety. And I'm here to tell you, as a longshoreman who's worked in the industry for 20-plus years, safety always takes a backseat to production. They tell you what you want to hear, and then they want to move it as fast as they can. Get it on a ship, get it out, get their money. We're tired of seeing our tax dollars go to putting in infrastructure for dying industries. We basically export every natural resource we have. And, you know, what are we left with? Job loss? You know, we don't make anything. As a longshoreman, I export raw material. You know, one of the first jobs I had was putting a lumber mill on a ship in pieces to send to the Philippines. You can go over the Lewis and Clark Bridge and see all the timber we send out. It's time we start investing in America, and I believe this resolution is a good way to do it. You know, let's not make it easy to send our natural resources overseas. Let's do it here. Let's build stuff here. Let's export finished product. The IAFF, the firefighters, you know, we talk to them, and they tell us, we tell them, you know, thank you for all the work you do. You know, we're glad that you oppose this. And they're like, man, this isn't about us. This is about you. You guys are going to be right down there in the line of fire. You're going to be stuck between railroad tracks and a river. So you're either going to probably, you know, get burned or drown. And that's what they say. They say how they fight these fires is they use their rule of thumb. They stand back far enough to where their thumb covers the fire, and they evacuate everybody behind them. And they just say that this is dangerous, and that they hope if there's a problem, they hope there's not a problem, but if there is, that they can get to us. So I'm really here on behalf of the longshore workers to ask you guys, please support this resolution. Help us out. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming down.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Can I just ask our friend from the Gorge, just on the question of a federal comprehensive impact statement on coal dust, a residual issue from something we talked about a couple years ago. Are we any closer to the federal government conducting such an assessment?
Unfortunately, the answer is no. And despite calls by the Northwest Senate delegation, a number of members of Congress and local governments throughout the region calling for a comprehensive programmatic environmental review of all of the coal and fossil fuel proposals together, particularly the Corps of Engineers refuses to do that and instead is doing the narrowest scope of environmental review under the National Environmental Policy Act that you could possibly do. And we believe that that's illegal, but a number of different elected officials across the region have asked for this and it hasn't been done. So what's happened is universities have taken this into their own hand and have received funding to do coal dust studies in the Gorge. And I'm not at liberty to speak a lot about this today, but there is a coal dust study being released this week that will demonstrate that coal trains emit twice the amount of pollution, particularly fine particulate pollution, as compared to normal freight trains.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. So now we want to call another panel. Actually, I'm going to modify this just a little bit and bring up. Okay. So, folks, the Lovejoy and Pettigrove rooms are available now for overflow. We'd like to ask as many of you as we're willing to please go relocate to those rooms so we can circulate people through. And I want to ask...
So there is video and audio there, so you'll be able to hear. And when your name gets called to testify, we'll get plenty of time for you to get back here. But yes, we're not really supposed to have people standing up in the...
Marshall's being kind to us, maybe because we're trying to avoid some fires. Peter, I want to invite Peter Cornelson from Hood River City Council and Kat Schultz from the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission to come up first, and then we'll call the rest of that panel after you. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Peter Cornelison, and I'm a member of the Hood River City Council. We are one of 10 regional governments in the Columbia Gorge that have passed resolutions of concern or outright opposition to oil transport by train through the Columbia River Gorge. Those governments are the Columbia River Gorge Commission, the Dalles, Mosier, the City and County of Hood River, Bingen, Stevenson, Washougal, the Washougal School District, and the Skamania County Fire District Number 4. Opposition to oil trains in the gorge has been overwhelming because every day our communities face the threat of an oil train accident, either a fire or a spill, that could destroy many of our homes and businesses. And Portland faces the same threat from oil trains moving through the city, bound either for California or for ports along the Columbia River. Every new oil project increases oil train traffic through the gorge or Portland is another role of the roulette wheel, upping the chances for a catastrophic accident. Dan Searies called this Russian roulette. I call this railroad roulette. The resolutions you're considering could establish Portland as a national leader regarding fossil fuel policies at a time when leadership is crucial. We in Hood River and the Gorge urge you to pass these resolutions and join our communities in standing up to oil and helping to bring about the new clean energy economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your leadership and for coming out. Thank you. Absolutely. Thanks for coming down the river. Kat, welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Kat Schultz. I'm Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I also participated in the advisory group that provided perspectives on options for the fossil fuel policy in front of you today. Both of those groups had a wide range of views and voices. Earlier this year, when the PSC was considering the zoning amendment that was necessary for a propane terminal to locate at Terminal 6, it became quite clear that we needed policy to guide our deliberations. What looked at the beginning like a discussion as to whether or not we should allow a pipe to cross the E-zone quickly evolved into a greater debate amongst the Commission and the community. It was challenging for the PSC to have to weigh the proposal with little established policy to guide our deliberations. While I think it's safe to say that the members of the PSC had different views on the propane proposal, I believe we all recognize the need for the city to establish clear policy guidance. That is why we supported the action in the updated climate action plan that called for the city to establish a fossil fuel policy. And it's not just to assist us, the planning commissioners. For when businesses are considering major investments, they need clarity and predictability. We owe it to them to establish clear policy. Personally, I've been conflicted. To combat climate change, we need to think globally. Discontinuing the use of fossil fuels at home and abroad is daunting as it is critical, and we're going to need all the tools in our toolkit. I believe that natural gas and propane can be one of those tools by using it as a bridge fuel. That being said, Portland needs to balance all of the goals that we have set forth in the Portland Plan to create a more prosperous, healthy, equitable, and resilient city. And I'm not convinced that a fossil fuel terminal creates long enough term jobs to justify the risk to our health, safety, and environmental welfare. Therefore, I'm in support of the proposed policies. In addition to my humble opinion, you'll hear from many people today who support the resolution and some who don't think that it adequately balances the economic considerations. There's a lot for you to consider. As you move forward with your deliberations, I encourage you to maintain as much clarity as possible with the overall policy direction so that the Planning and Sustainability Commission can work more carefully and effectively with BPS staff to develop a recommended code language to bring back to you. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate that point very much, Kat. We need to give you guidance from the council. So
please,
thank you.
We appreciate it.
Since you're here and it anticipates an amendment I'm going to offer, can I ask you a question? So the provision of the Climate Action Plan that has now led to what we're doing today is at page 69. and it was the request that the commission made to get guidance. Establish a fossil fuel export policy that considers life cycle emissions, safety, economics, neighborhood livability, and the environment. And it goes on. The advisory group that you were a part of met twice in October, and I had a chance to look at the minutes. And for some reason, the advisory group chose not to take up the economic consideration side of the conversation. And my question to you is, why was that, and is there, and how would you frame that question?
I'm not sure I'd say that there wasn't discussion about the economics. I think there were individuals on that advisory group that expressed thoughts that we need to understand the economic implications of it, but perhaps didn't exactly know what they were to be able to weigh more thoroughly into it. And sorry, what was the second part of your question again?
Well, when we say, I understand when we say considers life cycle emissions, I think I understand that, safety, neighborhood livability, the environment. What did you intend by consider economics? What was the issue that you wanted us to consider in balance as part of a policy?
If there was a tremendous amount of employment created, I think that needs to be weighed in and considered. And like I said, personally, I feel that there's at least the proposals that have come before us to date haven't exactly created a lot of long-term jobs. Therefore, when you start to balance all of the things that we're asked to look at, I question it, whether that employment mix is enough to kind of outweigh the other. So I guess economically, going back to it, I see it as tied to employment.
Thank you. Helpful.
Thank you both very much. So now let me call on Carlos Smith from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Javier Hurtado from the business here in Portland, Cha-Cha-Cha, and Mia Rebeck from 350.org, 350pdx.org. Good afternoon.
Sure.
Go ahead. Sure, that's fine. Don't have to go in that order.
All right. My name is Carlos Smith. I'm a tribal council member for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm here representing my tribe. I'm also here representing the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, which is made up of our tribe, the Warm Springs, the Yakima, the Umatilla, and the Nez Perce tribes. And we're here in support of the City of Portland's proposed resolutions. On behalf of the four treaty tribes that make up the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, I'd like to express my appreciation for Portland's leadership in opposing expansion of the fossil fuel transportation development and opposing increased crude by rail transportation. I appreciate that Portland is a good neighbor and that you reached out to the Columbia River Treaty Tribes to hear our concerns about the fossil fuel transport. Let me offer a few reasons why I think the two resolutions before you today are timely and needed and appreciated by the tribes. The Warm Springs, the Yakima, Umatilla, and Nez Perce tribes have uniquely bore the impacts of rail and waterborne shipment policies that have dramatically altered the Columbia River landscape and the dams and rail lines. Actions by this City Council of Portland have and will continue to shape and impact the entire Columbia River transportation corridor. Proposed coal and oil port transportation developments in Oregon and Washington would injure the tribe's interest. The tribes oppose the Coyote Island coal port facility, as you're aware of. The tribes also oppose the Teresa Savage proposal at the Port of Vancouver, which would be the largest oil port in North America. The additional scrutiny that the city bureau would bring as a result of these resolutions would help ensure that the concerns and risk involved and these projects would be adequately studied and evaluated for future generations. First responders along the Columbia River are not prepared for a crude by rail derailment, and it's not their fault. They didn't ask for this crude by rail shipments. Federal and state agencies have convened several discussions, but local, city, county, and tribal governments will bear the burden of an oil spill. Like the City of Portland, the Columbia River Treaty Tribes are very concerned about climate change, particularly on salmon and our other first foods. Reducing fossil fuel use of this movement is in the right direction for addressing climate change, we feel. The Warm Springs Tribe is a member of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We have the closest ties to the city and its judicial. It's been determined that we're a successor in the interest of the seven bands of the treaty signature to the Treaties of Middle Oregon, June 25th, 1855. The 1855 treaty specifically secured off-reservation fishing rights for the Warm Springs tribes at all usual and accustomed stations. Federal courts have ruled that this fishing right can be located both within and without the reservation in its tribal ceded areas. This includes the area that's now occupied by the city of Portland and the largest and best known of the Warm Springs tribe off-reservation usual and custom fishing places is Willamette Falls, located just a few miles upstream from the city of Portland. We feel that it's very heartening that the city of Portland, under this council's leadership, has proposed what would be the most substantive and aggressive fossil fuel policy ever adopted by an American city. Our entire region is defined by the Columbia River, and its protection should be on the forefront of our thoughts and our actions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I just want to also address the question you had earlier about coal dust. I have on my office and my tribal council a bottle of coal dust that I just went down to the river and collected. Now, we had the coal companies meet with our tribe and told us there will be no coal dust that will enter the Columbia River at any level, at any time. And I showed them the jar, and they wouldn't answer our question. And they told us that they spray it with a chemical so it doesn't fly off the carts. And I asked them what that chemical was, and they've never released to our tribe what that chemical is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Javier, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Javier Hurtado. I'm the owner of the local business here in Portland. I have seven restaurants, and I employ about 140 people. My concern with the environment is that I'm here as a citizen, I'm here as a business owner, I'm here as a father, and I'm here as a businessman because I'm worried about my supply chain. Most of the food, wine that we buy comes from Oregon or Washington. We buy all of our pork from Washington, all of our a lot of wine from the Colombian Gorge. We buy a lot of beef. All of our beef comes from Oregon. A lot of vegetables from Hood River. So I'm really concerned because prices is a huge thing to consider as a businessman. And I know that when things become scarce, prices go up. And if there were to be an accident due to derailment or some kind of accumulation of dust, that will impact the farmers that I work with. That will impact the winemakers that I work with directly. I have been working with local farmers, local winemakers, local produce people, and trying to establish this supply chain that is direct from farm, from winemakers, from ranchers to restaurants. I recently met with some scientists, and they expressed that 70% of the food that we consume comes from restaurants. So as a business owner, I feel that responsibility to offer healthy food to all the people that come to my restaurants. I feel as a business owner to contribute to society by buying from these local farmers, local ranchers. But I also feel like one of our biggest challenge and biggest goal as business owners here in Portland is to conserve our environment. So in Cha-Cha-Cha has worked very closely with wetland conservancy programs. We have also started buying a lot of seafood that has been MBA or MSC certified. So it's really, really important to us how we get our food, and if it's not that it's not contaminated, that it's not exposed to some type of derailment, that it's healthy for our children. So I'm here supporting both resolutions, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Ms. Rebeck, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor Hales and other commissioners, for having me here today to speak out in support of both of these resolutions. My name is Mia Reback, and I'm the staff organizer with 350 PDX. As you know, the climate forecast is grim. The world's best scientists tell us that if we stay on the business-as-usual path, we have, at best, 15 years until we blow through the world's carbon budget. That is the amount of fossil fuels we can safely burn without crossing catastrophic climate tipping points. In spite of that, the world's most destructive energy companies are proposing some 28 new or expanded fossil fuel projects in the Pacific Northwest. If even half of these projects are built, it would likely mean game over for the planet as we know it. Portland, like many cities in Oregon and Washington, is geographically between new fossil fuel extraction projects and the market where these fuels are burned. Because of this, Portland is a likely candidate for new transport projects and storage terminals. Many of these fossil fuels come from newer developments in North Dakota, Utah, Montana, and Alberta, Canada. The burning of any fossil fuels emits climate change causing greenhouse gases, but these unconventional fossil fuels come at an added cost. Not only are they harder to get out, but they are more prone to spills, derailments, and explosions than conventional fuels. So communities like Portland bear the risk of a highly volatile product being transported through our city with little to none of the economic benefit. And then we get hit again with a second round of hazards when these fuels are burned and their carbon pollution adds to global climate change. In order to stave off a warming climate, we must establish a truly sustainable economy that keeps all fossil fuels in the ground. At just 23 years old, my future looks bleak without meaningful climate action, and the time to act is now. The grassroots all across the Pacific Northwest have risen up in a green line of resistance to keep the remaining fossil fuels in the ground. From Pembina to Shell, ordinary people have stood in the way of this rogue industry whose insatiable need for profit is destroying our ability to live on this planet. And city governments are leading the way too, pushing the status quo of what government action can look like to meaningfully address this crisis. In writing and implementing a world-renowned climate action plan, our city is garnering worldwide attention and inspiring other jurisdictions to take action. Only by stopping to participate in the fossil fuel economy can we truly start the real work of addressing climate change, potentially creating tens of thousands of jobs as we upgrade to a cleaner grid, fix up our homes to be energy efficient and weatherized, and ensure that everyone has sustainable and healthy food to eat. This December, global leaders are gathering for the Paris Climate Talks to discuss ways we can do more together to address climate change and dangerous fossil fuels. These global leaders are watching what we do here today in Portland and waiting to follow our lead on the charge to stop new fossil fuel infrastructure. And with that, I am proud to introduce our next panelist, who will be joining us on video, international climate leader and co-founder of 350.org, Bill McKibben.
Hello. I very much wish I could be there with you today, but I'm glad to join you by low carbon Skype. I'm actually in Washington today with Senator Merkley, introducing an important bill about fossil fuel on public lands. Because of the dysfunction of our Congress, that will take a long time to get passed. We're very hopeful, though, that the Portland City Council will demonstrate its full functionality today and demonstrate profound leadership on the most important question that faces us. Look, climate change, about which I wrote the first book for a general audience 26 years ago, is fully and firmly out of control. Things are really escalating and escalating fast. All you have to do is look at the pictures today. From the first hurricane ever to pound into the desert nation of Yemen, it's almost unthinkable, but there it is. That's why we need powerful steps like the ones that the council is considering today to stop fossil fuel infrastructure from being constructed going forward. We have to move quickly off the fossil fuel age. We now are able to do that. Our renewable technology is good enough now and getting cheaper and better almost by the hour that this kind of step is no longer at all quixotic. Instead, it's sensible and smart, and the only thing that stands in its way is the kind of endless inertia and momentum that's gone with a century of burning coal and gas and oil. somebody needs to take the lead, and we're so grateful to Mayor Hales, to Councilor Fritz, and so hopeful that at least one of their colleagues will join them in this remarkable step. Portland will go down as an absolute leader among all jurisdictions, cities, counties, states, nations, if it does this. It will be a beautiful segue from the great leadership that Portland's climate action plan has shown. One of the first cities to do that, too. And, of course, it will be great testament to the amazing work of people like 350 PDX and all our other colleagues out there who really roused the world's conscience with their amazing protests against drilling in the Arctic earlier this year. If those protests roused your conscience too, then, councilors, you are in exactly the right place to put those consciences to work and do something of the first order of importance. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you so much. And it's great to have Mr. McKibben here in our chamber again. So let's call staff back up to answer any questions that council members have, and then we'll move to testimony. So come on back up, Michael, Christina. Okay. You want to take up amendments and then questions, or questions and then amendments?
I think we should do amendments first.
Okay.
Steve has his up, so
all right.
We'll defer to him.
Mr. Novick, would you like to talk about your proposed amendment?
Actually, I have a number of them. And I'd like to preface this by saying that what we are talking about here today largely is climate disruption, which is the most important issue the human race has ever faced. And it's more important than homelessness, because a generation of homelessness can hopefully end in the next generation. It's more important than income inequality, because we proved from 1929 to 1960 that spectacular income inequality, horrible that it is, can change in a generation. What we're doing to the planet, if we continue doing it, cannot be changed in a generation or two or 10 or 100. I actually am planning to bring my own climate-related resolution to council within a few weeks, which would be to say that we call on Congress to establish a carbon tax of sufficient strength to force the market to renewable energy, that we have a rebate, an income tax, an offsetting income tax rebate for low and middle income people, so that if they actually use less fossil fuels, they'll come out ahead. And that we have a massive national program to invest in transit and bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure and the development of new renewable energy sources, and that should be paid for by taxes on rich people and by massive cuts to our blood defense budget. So that would be my climate resolution. I'm going to raise some amendments that I think some people here might be concerned about and disagree with, and ask some questions that might have the same reaction. I do so because I think because this is the most important issue facing the world, we need to treat it very carefully and thoughtfully, and I'm particularly sensitive to the idea of committing the sin of hypocrisy, because most of us, like it or not, are part of the carbon economy, and most of our hands are not clean. This council, actually, in April of 2013, arguably passed an ordinance forcing the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure, because we passed an ordinance requiring that apartment buildings above a certain height, above a certain number of units, would have to have parking spaces built into them. And parking, I think, could be reasonably categorized as fossil fuel infrastructure, given that most cars run on gas. So I think that our hands are not necessarily clean. I mean, and I actually didn't vote for that because I wasn't here that day, but I was prepared to vote for it. Only Commissioner Saltzman voted against it. I'm not sure that was the right thing to do. We were reacting to concerns of citizens in the city about apartment buildings going up without parking, and we made a decision. But I think that's an example of how we need to recognize that, in the immortal words of Pogo the Opossum, when it comes to climate issues as well as other environmental issues, we have met the enemy and he is us. So it is with that background that I offer a number of amendments to both of these resolutions. First of all,
Steve, can we wait till we get copies?
Yeah. Oh, I've been. The first one is actually not particularly substantive, except it's an amendment to the third whereas clause in 1156, and there's a reference in that to serious risk being caused by adverse health impacts of train noise. And I'm suggesting deleting that because train noise isn't particular to oil trains. Train noise is generic to trains. And I don't think we want to make a statement that trains are always bad, particularly when I think often the alternative to travel by train is travel by truck, which is generally more carbon intensive. Also, I like the noise of trains, but that's